This episode of Pub Talk Live was broadcast on October 12, 2019, with guest co-host Brenda Drake and special guest Terry Michaels. Hello, everybody. Welcome to our very first episode of Pub Talk Live. I am so happy that you are joining us today. So Pub Talk Live is meant to be a talk show that's centered around the publishing industry. So each episode, I will have a guest co-host and also a special guest. I started it because I love just kind of the casual conversations that you have with people in the industry at conferences and hanging out, you know, at different writing events. And so I wanted to kind of bring that online and invite more people into the conversation, invite more people to, you know, kind of check out what everyone's saying. So if you look down in the description below, there are a couple links there for you. You can find out about our guests today. You can find out about some of the conventions that we're going to talk about. And you can find a link for the Pub Talk Live Patreon, as well as how to just subscribe to notifications about different episodes via email. So I can email you the day before or the day of every episode, so you can get that reminder. And then you're also going to find information about Pub Talk Live. So media is just Pub Talk Live on Twitter and Instagram. And I did want to thank, before we get started today, Angie Bailey and Stephen Morgan for helping me workshop the name of the show, and also all of my friends and coworkers who have been listening to me kind of plan it and workshop it out loud for months, I think. And our guest co-host today, Brenda, is one of those people who kind of had to hear me talk about it for a long time. So I'm going to go ahead and introduce today our guest co-host, Brenda Drake. Brenda Drake is the New York Times bestselling author of the Library Jumper series, The Faded series, and Annalise Rising. She is the founder of both Pitch Wars and Pit Mad. So welcome to the show, Brenda.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Hi, thank you so much for being my guinea pig.
Okay. I like being a specimen too.
It's the first episode, so Brenda is brave enough to join me live on the very first episode of Pub Talk Live. We are going to go ahead and get started and talk about our viewer poll because it will close at 9:30. So you have to vote in that before 9:30. And so it's, have you ever attended a large book festival or convention? And we're going to be talking about the answer at the end. And I'm going to go ahead and actually drop the link directly to that in the comments there. So if you want to find it, I just dropped that in the live chat comments. Oh, we have a lot of people joining in. Let's see. Cal was here early. Tamara was here early. Tamara had said, they thought they missed it before earlier, but they forgot that we're in different time zones.
So. I'm always in a different time zone. So
that's true.
I never know.
I think you're really good at doing the calculation at this point. Yeah. Geeky Acrylic says hi. Ebony waves hi. Heather wasn't sure if she was going to be able to make it, and she's here. So that's cool.
Hi, Heather. Hi, everybody. All right.
Oh, Ebony says, hi, Brenda.
Hi, Ebony.
All right. And so, Brenda, you go to quite a few conventions, right?
Yes. A little too many, maybe. I don't know. But I enjoy them. They're fun. It's a great way to meet up with author friends and meet new authors and books that you can get to know different writing styles and new books that you didn't know you would like.
Yeah, I love them too. I love all of them. Mm-hmm. I'm an extrovert, so I want to be around book people all the time.
Right.
Yeah, more than they want to be around me, I think.
No. I was like just thinking, like, because you're like an extrovert, and I'm kind of like an introvert extrovert kind of. Because like I'll be extroverted for a little while, and then I'm like, okay, I got to go to the room for a minute and then come back out. Yeah. But you're sometimes, always ready to go.
Yeah, sometimes I just need a nap though, because I'm mm-hmm. so extroverted that I stay up so late talking to people, and then like I don't want to miss anything, you know. So
yeah,
sometimes I just get physically tired, but other than that, I'm there.
Yeah.
All right. Let's see. Ebony says, I've yet to attend one, but I would definitely love to. What's a good way to find them, local or otherwise? Well, I find a lot of them on social media. That's why I find out a lot about them.
Yeah, I find them on social media or by other author friends who tell me about them. But is there any site? I don't know.
There are a couple sites, but none of them are really like comprehensive, I feel.
Right.
I did write an article for Book Riot a couple years ago that was a book con in every state, but even now some of those are
defunct. Yeah. I say look online and or just watch author feeds and writer hashtags, because people are always talking about them.
Yeah, and look at the appearance. A lot of your favorite authors will have an appearance section on their website, and you can find out about some of those there too.
That's true.
All right, so we're going to go ahead and jump into publishing news.
Woohoo!
Yeah. All right, so the first thing I want to talk about today is something that's been developing for a while now, is the Audible captions. And Brenda, you didn't know about this until I sent you the show notes, right?
Right.
So Audible has decided that they can take audiobooks and create text out of them and use them as like captions, but it's essentially creating an ebook out of the audiobook. Right. And so of course publishers are pushing back against that. And Audible tried to get the case dismissed last week and the judge refused to dismiss it. So we're just gonna have to keep watching that. But it does, I'm glad that the publishers are pushing back on this, because it does seem like they're trying to go around ebooks in a little way.
Right. It's like a transcript of the audiobook, which is in an ebook.
Yeah.
Makes no sense.
I listen to a lot of audiobooks. So, but all right. The next item on our list is the New York Times adjusted their list again.
Woohoo! Yay.
Yeah. This time it's for the better, I think. In 2017, they cut their mass market paperback and graphic novel and manga lists, among other things, like their middle grade and young adult ebook lists.
Right.
And I know that had a big impact. A lot fewer authors are now hitting lists because of that.
It's usually like the same authors hitting the list over and over. Right.
Yeah, definitely. Especially the hardcover. A lot of young adult just isn't released in hardcover. Right. So, and romance too. A lot of romance isn't released in hardcover either.
Right.
But 2 weeks ago, they announced that they're adding back some of these categories with a mass market paperback list, a combined graphic books list, and that includes like any kind of book that can be considered graphic. So like long form comics or graphic novels or anything that has like a major graphic element to it. And two new monthly lists, and that's the middle grade paperback and young adult paperback, which I'm super excited about.
I know, that's exciting. Definitely.
They are also cutting their science and sports lists, which I found interesting. But they said that a lot of the books that hit those lists were hitting the nonfiction lists in other categories.
Yeah, I'm not familiar with how popular those are or what happens there, but I don't know.
The other thing they did is for their combined print ebook list and also their hardcover list, which I feel like are the big ones that everyone checks, they're only going to print the top 10 of the 15.
The 15 will still be online, right? They'll still be on the website, but just 10 in the newspaper, which is kind of yucky.
Yeah, I guess they're trying to make room
for the others, I guess.
Yeah. But the other thing that I thought was really interesting about this is the graphic book list covers all formats on all platforms.
Yeah.
So it includes like e.
Oh, all of them. Ebooks, paperbacks.
Yeah.
Hardcovers. Because some do come in hardcovers too. That's interesting.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. every so it's going to combine all of them. Though of course, like, I don't know how much Amazon shares their sales data with the New York Times. I don't know how that works.
Yeah, I don't know. They, well, at least they're giving some back, some of the stuff back that they took away.
Yeah, and they're especially excited about the middle grade and young adult paperbacks, because a lot of those go straight to paperback. They don't have a a hardback first. We're getting some spam comments, so I'm going to try real quick to see if I can block this person.
Okay. That spammer.
All right. I think I did it. Or at least they won't be able to comment again, maybe. All right. So, yeah, so that's just interesting all around. I think that's going to result in a lot more authors hitting a list.
Yeah, that's going to be great. Especially for...
Go ahead.
Especially for smaller presses, too, I would think.
Yeah, and it opens up because, I mean, people really take the New York Times bestseller list seriously. You know, people see that and they pay attention. Mm-hmm. And so I think opening up to more authors is probably a good thing.
Yeah. Yeah, it is.
It's not like they're opening it wide, but some categories and genres, they just aren't able to hit the list very easily, you know?
Correct. You're right.
All right. So one more. Yeah. Another kind of legal thing that's going on right now, and I didn't know about this until Publishers Weekly published an article about it. It's called the CASE Act. So currently, it's really difficult for small business owners like authors to enforce copyrights because those cases can only be tried in federal court, which is very expensive and very difficult to pursue, and is also just like takes a lot of time on everyone's, you know, part. So this is the Copyright Alternative in Small Claims Enforcement, or CASE Act. It would allow for small copyright infringement cases to be tried via an administrative tribunal within the U.S. Copyright Office. And here's the thing that I thought was really interesting about this. All of the proceedings are going to be remote. So you don't even have to like travel to a court.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, because a lot of people can't even afford, like, if you have to travel somewhere to and go to federal court.
Yeah.
Yeah, a lot of people get away with copywriting infringements because people won't spend that money to, you know, take them to court.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was really excited when I read about this because I feel like there are a lot of, like, ebook pirating websites that you can't really go after because... no one, you know, makes enough money off of ebooks
I know.
To, you know, go after someone in federal court over them. But then I started reading different opinions about them. And some people are worried that this is going to create like more nuisance suits. Like people are going to try for copyright court cases, like just to see if they can get some money out of it, looking for settlements and stuff. And so I know, though, that this is actually the second iteration of this law that's being considered. It was originally introduced in like 2017, and they made a lot of changes based on a lot of people's reactions to it. So I'm hoping, you know,
they get further with it.
They'll get it right this time. Right. So it's been passed by the Senate Judiciary Committee, and from what I understand, should be up for voting in both the Senate and the House soon. It is a bipartisan bill, which to me seems like a miracle these days to have anyone agree, or, you know, both parties agree on something. So
that's great.
Definitely be keeping a lookout for that, because that seems really...
Like, well, I have exciting news. Oh, were you saying?
No, go for it.
You finish it.
No, I was just saying it. I think it could help a lot of people.
Yeah. I have exciting news. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Chief Engineer Jordy LaForge. No, right. Okay. LeVar Burton is going to host the National Book Awards. And I was just all excited because, you know, Star Trek geek here. And of course, I've always loved seeing him on Reading Rainbow and all that kind of stuff. So it's really, and he's done so much for kids and reading and stuff. And it's really great that he's going to get to host the National Book Awards. And if I messed up his name, it's LeVar Burton, because I was so excited to call him Chief Engineer Jordy LaForge.
That is exciting. I wish I could go.
I know, right?
If anyone has ticket hookups, me and Brenda.
Yeah. And an airline ticket and a hotel room and all of that.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's really great. I was just talking on a podcast today about the National Book Awards, and I saw Lisa Lucas, who's the executive director of the National Book Foundation. She was talking about making the National Book Awards into kind of like a bigger event. Like, she wanted it to be like an award ceremony that like people watched and paid attention to, you know?
That would be great.
Yeah, I think it would really be great too. Yeah. Like, I would love to have like a National Book Award like watch party. Like, they have Oscar parties.
Right. Yeah, they need to make it like the Oscars. Everybody deck out and get their awards and, you know, have a red carpet.
Yeah. Yeah, well, they do a lot of it, but kind of on a smaller scale. And I think they've been broadcasting it, but just like online, you know?
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, which, I mean, we're just online, so.
Just online. Nothing wrong with that. YouTube doesn't do anything anymore. Right.
Some people are really excited about LeVar Burton hosting. I'm seeing some comments.
I know, how exciting.
Yeah. And Heather also, I think she's agreeing to us wanting to see a big deal made out of book awards.
Yeah. And it's, I think they picked the right one, the right presenter to be the host to be there this time. Yeah.
Yeah. I loved Reading Rainbow as a kid.
I know, right? And who can't not loved him in Roots? I mean, you know.
Yeah.
Kunta Kinte, he was, you know, came out with that, and he's always been such an advocate for kids. So,
yeah.
Yay.
Mm-hmm. Well, hopefully we can watch the live stream if we can't make it in person.
Yeah.
So speaking of children and books, Greta Thunberg, who's made a lot of news recently for her climate activism, has inspired several children's books. So there are children's books about her written by other people, which I thought was really interesting because she also has a 2-book deal.
Oh, but wow.
It's going to be more of like a long form nonfiction, not a children's book.
Yeah, she's such a inspiration. She's trying to change the climate in the world and make everybody aware of what's going on and how we can do better than leaving our footprint on this world. So
yeah,
that's really exciting.
Yeah. And I think if the children's books are especially cool because, you know, you're going to get them early, you know,
start them young, get them going.
All right. So, again, on children's books, sales in the children and young adult category rose in July 16.6% over the 2018 numbers.
That's really encouraging.
Yeah, it's really great because we always like to talk about like how publishing is dying and no one's reading anymore. But I mean, obviously that's true. But it's nice to see the numbers.
It could be me buying all the books. I don't know.
you do buy a lot of books. Yeah, but even adult sales rose 3.9%.
Oh, yeah, that's great. Well,
yeah.
They need to raise more because you would think adults would be reading more.
Yeah.
But if you look at some of the adults I know, they don't even read. So I need to get them reading.
Yeah. Sometimes it just takes out one book, you know?
Right.
And definitely. You had news about another.
Oh, this is exciting too. This is an exciting news thing other than the other stuff that I didn't understand. Just kidding. Anyway, so there's a new Hunger Games book coming. I'm sure everybody already heard that. The book will come out in May 19, 2020 in the United States and every major English-speaking country. It's the first English printing, which will be 2.5 million copies. And Scholastic says it has sold the translation rights for over like 28 other territories.
Oh, goodness.
I mean, that's a lot. It takes place during the 10th Hunger Games, 64 years before the events of the first Hunger Games novel. And Lionsgate said it's already working on a movie based on this book. So that's kind of exciting because, like, so it's 10 years after the New World happened, like the destruction of the world before Hunger Games, mm-hmm. and then they're rebuilding the world, and then they have the 10th Hunger Games. So interesting. I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, well, I remember when they first announced it, people were kind of like trying to guess what it would focus on. Mm-hmm. A lot of people were thinking some of the older characters that are in Hunger Games, that it would kind of like follow them, but it seems like 64 years earlier, that's
going to be her grandparents or something.
Yeah. That's too early for us to follow, some of those characters. So
I kind of wish we could see some of those characters, but yeah, you know, 64 years, you can't. So they're going to bring us brand new characters to root for, I guess.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting.
Yeah. Especially because, you know, people keep saying YA dystopian is dead.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously this is going to sell, you know, so I wonder if we'll see a resurgence of
dystopia. I hope so, because I do like dystopian and, you know, I think it needs to come back.
Yeah.
But that's just my opinion. But then again, I like all categories or genres. So I'm always going, well, that needs to come back. Like, I'm really rooting for vampires right now.
I know, just urban fantasy in general. Like, I really need it back.
Yeah.
So I can read it and so I can write it.
Yeah. True.
All right. So Good Morning America announced it's launching a book club called Cover to Cover. Now, it's not really the first time they did something like this. They used to do something called Read This, where one book club recommended a book. But the reason why I wanted to mention is their first pick is called Dominicana by Angie Cruz. They said they'll be showcasing diverse and compelling authors telling both fiction and nonfiction stories. And so this book is about a 15-year-old girl who immigrates to New York City in the 1960s from the Dominican Republic, leaving her entire family behind in hopes of building a life for them here in the U.S. And so I just thought that it was really cool that they chose a book like this to launch, you know,
their book club. I'm all for that. Start with some, you know, like I had been looking at this book. I haven't read this book. Have you read it yet? No. Yeah. This is exciting news too. This is all exciting news. That will be my new catchphrase. This is exciting news.
Next up. Exciting. Yeah.
And then, you know, Random House is launching a new graphic novel in print with the first title coming out in January. Many of the first new titles are translations or adaptations from other formats such as zines. So that'll be fun.
Yeah. I think a lot of people for a long time have been trying to get graphic novels in the forefront. And that's just kind of evidence mm-hmm. that the publishers are finally starting to take it seriously. You know, you have one of the biggest publishers launching a whole imprint specifically for that.
Right. And graphic novels are really good for kids that have a hard time reading and they're learning how to read and they have a learning disability with reading because Fallon has a hard time reading and she likes to read graphic novels a lot and she feels accomplished because she's, you know, she stays interested in it and she finishes it and it's just a great opportunity to get those books out there to kids that need them.
Yeah. So the Nobel Prize in Literature was announced this week and it's created a lot of buzz, mostly in a negative way.
Okay. This is not exciting news.
Those of you who didn't follow last year, I forget what the organization is called that announces the Nobel Prize. I can't remember the name of the organization right now, but they were kind of taken down a little bit last year from a kind of Me Too scandal, and most of the members resigned. And so they did not give a Nobel Prize in Literature in 2018. Right. And so they kind of restructured a little bit, and now they're back. And so they give both the 2018 and 2019 awards. And so the 2018 award went to Olga Tokarczuk. I don't know if that's right. A Polish author who has won the Man Booker has been condemned by far-right groups in her home country for her leftist views. She's been critical of nationalism and xenophobia in her home country, especially when it comes to defending the Jewish population in Poland. Now, the 2019 award.
Gosh.
Went to Peter Handke. I am so bad with
I think that sounds right.
He's an Austrian author who's been criticized for his support of a former Yugoslav and Serbian president charged with war crimes. People said he's an apologist for far-right Serbian nationalism. PEN America released a statement saying, quote, "We are dumbfounded by the selection of a writer who has used his public voice to undercut historical truth and offer public succor to perpetrators of genocide."
Wow.
Yeah.
That's like total opposite sides of
the pendulum
there. Oh my gosh.
So a lot of people are wondering, are they trying to make a statement as to their neutrality?
So what, give one side their winner and the other side their winner, and maybe no one will fight?
Yeah.
I don't know.
No, I haven't read either of these books. I know they announced that the 2018 award winner, Olga Tokarczuk, she just signed a deal to have her book translated into English. So we'll be able to read it soon.
Oh, great.
But I think that's definitely a choice.
Yes, it's a choice. That is a choice. It's not exciting. It's kind of exciting for one person, but I don't know.
Yeah. No one's excited about it.
Oh, my goodness. Okay. Anyway, let's go to something fun, like debut YA by member of Chippewa tribe sells a 7-figure deal. The Firekeeper's Daughter by Angeline Bouley turned a lot of heads when it went for 7 figures in a 12-bidder auction right before Frankfurt Book Fair. That's exciting.
Yeah, when I saw, I got this email a couple of days ago, my jaw dropped at 12-bidder
auction. I know. And I'm excited for it to be going to a Native American. And, you know, I live here in Land of Enchantment, New Mexico. So, but not that she's from here, but it's exciting to see minorities get the deals that, you know, we can see their stories and hear their stories and get their stories out there. So that's exciting.
Yeah. And there have been quite a few big deals coming up right before the Frankfurt Book Fair. And, you know, agents want and editors want to get these deals announced right before Frankfurt so that there's buzz for that, you know, foreign rights negotiations and everything. But this is the one that I was most interested in, I think.
I wonder if she got a lot of foreign rights sold. They must have. I mean, come on, there's like a 7-figure big, huge deal here.
Yeah. I don't know. Ebony said 12 bidders. 7 figures. Yeah, exactly.
She's got to have all those foreign deals coming in.
But yeah, I think, I mean, if I were her agent, I would definitely be leveraging that buzz at Frankfurt to get maybe some auctions going on the foreign rights too, you know?
Right. It's exciting.
All right. Well, I think that's all the news we had for today. It was a lot, right? There's a lot going on in the book industry right now.
There is. I didn't even know any of this stuff until you started telling me about it, which is cool. Yeah. It's I've been to pitch wars in my head all month.
Oh, yeah. Tell me about it. So for those of you who don't know, Brenda is the founder of Pitch Wars, and I am this year's managing director. So we are doing a lot of work right now. All right, so we're going to bring on our special guest. I'm very excited about our special guest today. I'm going to read her intro, and then we'll bring her on screen. Terry Michaels writes happily ever afters in the big city with heaps of snark, angst, and humor. Her focus is on characters and all the ridiculous ways they trip through life and love. She has written 15 books, including her popular Faith, Love, and Devotion series, and the superhero saga, The Vigilante. She has been presenting workshops on the writing process for 10 years and has taught at RT Book Lovers Convention, RWA, online classes and chapters, RWA Nationals, Liberty States, Sisters in Crime, Horror Writers of America. She taught and managed RT Book Lovers Convention Boot Camp and now curates a professional development program for Book Lovers Convention, as well as her own workshops through Writer's Garage. You can find her at terrymichaels.com or on Twitter at terrymichaels and Facebook. And those links are down below in the comments, so you can grab those. So welcome to the show, Terry.
Hi, Terry.
Hi, everybody. Hi, hey. Thank you for having me.
Oh, thanks so much. I love that both of you just like trusted me enough to come on the show.
You did Absolutely. Bribe me. Didn't you bribe me for like, I'm going to see you Wednesday. Just
kidding. Right, yeah. I think it was more of like, oh, I won't be happy.
I was right. not bribed.
Yeah, Terry's like, sure, why not?
Because Terry's such a nice person.
Yeah. Oh, gosh.
All right. Sometimes. I do remember, Terry, I talked to you a couple years at Coastal Magic Convention. Oh, so that's a thing. So all three of us are going to be featured authors at Coastal Magic Convention in 2020. And that link is also down below. So if you want to check that out, you can find out more about that. Me and Terry love the convention. Brenda is going to be her first time this year.
I'm excited.
It's really laid back, like on the beach in February in Daytona Beach.
Perfect.
Yeah. Romance, urban fantasy, paranormal romance, and some young adult too. So check that out, because it's just a super great con. But I was talking to Terry, I think it was 2 years ago at Coastal Magic, and she was like, you know, if you ever need anything, just let me know. And so I did. And now we're here.
And now we're here.
All right. So Terry, you have a pretty unique writing process. I've heard you talk a little bit about it before. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
I will start with a disclaimer that nobody in their right mind should write the way I do. Like, nobody should go, wow, that sounds like an amazing process. I think I'll copy it. I don't write a word until I have worked out the characters and their emotional arcs in my head. So essentially, I write a first draft in my head. Once I convince myself that this is an actual book and not a cool premise, it takes a while, a couple of months, me walking around thinking this book. Then I write the first three chapters until I'm happy. And then I write the last three chapters until I'm happy. And then I start writing the book. It is not a fast process. I am not a 12 book a year person. It would be impossible. There's not enough hours in the day for my brain to do what it needs to before I write. But it's literally the only way I can write a book. I have to live with it in my head. I have to convince myself. And then I allow paper to see it. And then I allow an editor to see it. The reality is my first draft is usually my final draft. The downside of that is when you write a first draft in your head and you don't immediately write it down, then you have to rewrite it in your head. So there is no backup system for if you forget something. So once again, I do not advise this for anybody.
I don't even think I could do that.
I don't know why that's my process. But I was a senior editor for a couple of years. So I think it's my inner editor going, no, that's stupid. That's ridiculous. Like, then I will, once I convince myself and the inner editor shuts up, then I can actually start writing.
Wow.
That's interesting.
The reason why I wanted to ask you that question on the show, by the way, is because I wanted to show everyone that like, there is no one way to write a book.
No.
And I think sometimes we'll get this like prescriptive advice of like, if you don't do it this way, like you'll never get published. And obviously that's not true because you just described your process and me and Brenda are horrified.
Right. So.
I am so easily distracted, you know, like something, one noise can happen and I'll be going, what? You know, you have to have a lot of concentration.
It is, I think it's almost borderline obsessive. If we're going to go ahead and use that word.
In the best way.
In the best way. I find it means less unfinished manuscripts for me personally. If I'm writing it, it's going to end up being finished at some point. I don't have a lot of stuff that's like stop and start, stop and start. The first three chapters is usually my stop and start, me figuring out where I need to start the story. But it's, you know, it's the only way I can write. And I think that's a good point. I don't want people to get caught up with like, I didn't write 2,000 words today, or I didn't write this month. That's fine. Are you thinking about your stories? Are you thinking about your characters? Then you're writing. So I count all head time as writing time. So you're welcome. You can write that down. Yeah.
Thank you.
Go ahead and be like, absolutely.
Yes. So, and that brings to the Faith, Love, and Devotion series ran for 7 books and 10 years. What does it take to keep a series like that successful for that long?
I think it's very specific for me because I'm a character arc oriented writer. I'm not a plot writer. My plots, I believe, are bicycles that you ride to get from the beginning of the character arc to the end of the character arc. For me, it was knowing my characters very, very well and keeping them growing with every book. Like they didn't repeat the same mistakes unless it was because they needed to learn a new lesson out of it. So I was very particular about the experiences these people were going to go through with each book. And honestly, the last book was the wrap up book. And it was sort of like a series of codas, like you're happily, what happens after Happily Ever After. And I wrote it in 6 weeks, because these characters were so specific in my head and their voices were so, they were easy to get back into because I had been very specific as I was writing over the years, and where I wanted them to end up. So I think it really has to do a lot with understanding who these characters are and keeping the arc fresh. I think that when people get frustrated, if you see when people get frustrated reading a series, it's because they feel like, we already did this. Like, why is this happening again? Why is there suddenly jealousy in a relationship that's been happening for so long? Or whatever it is, I just tried to keep each of the new things that they went through something fresh and something different that they grew through. Also have an editor that has a spreadsheet to remember how old everybody is, because that is the other thing that keeps a series fresh, because I don't remember how old anybody is in the story.
Yeah, that was
tough. that was my editor's job.
Unless you do it, J.K. Rowling does, and each year they grow 1 year older.
Right. There were a lot of children born, and I just could not remember how old people were. So that was entirely her job. She had a spreadsheet. So
that's good.
These are the secrets. That's the secrets to a 10-year running series.
Yeah. Lots of notes.
Lots of notes.
Excel sheets. That's my favorite.
Yeah.
All right. So I have, by the way, when you see me looking the side, I have the YouTube chat on my phone on the side so I can see, because there's a little bit of lag between when we're talking and when it shows up on YouTube. So I can kind of keep track of that. So if I'm looking the side, that's why. And also my friends are responding to me about every play in the Florida LSU game. So that keeps popping up too. But that's on accident. All right. So Book Lovers Con, Terry, you are the marketing event manager. Is that right?
Marketing and events manager.
Yeah. Yes. Mm-hmm. It's March 18th through the 22nd, 2020 in Nashville.
In Nashville.
Yeah. Can you tell us a little bit about that con?
So Book Lovers Con was born out of RT. When RT Book Lovers Con, when the owners retired, several people who were involved, the head conference director created her own company and I came to work with her. It is very reader oriented. So our whole thing is, you know, your great reader experience. So if you want to be around people who love books, if you want to be introduced to a lot of not just your favorite authors, but new authors, if you're always looking for new authors, this is a good way to do it. It's a 5-day event. We feed you several times. There's dress up parties at night. There's reader events during the day. There's lottery events. So it's us in the mindset of I'm a reader. I want to go away on a 5-day vacation and talk about books with people for 5 days, is essentially what Book Lovers Con is about.
Is there a genre focus?
No, not really. We of course have our roots in romance, but there's a very interesting thing. And now allow me to get my romance, geek on. There's an interesting crossover, with romance readers. So super romance readers are their home is in romance, but they go to suspense and thriller and to YA genre. This is the expanse that they have. It's very interesting. If you know anybody who works in marketing in this industry, they will tell you that because it's so interesting that people like happy, fluffy romance and then also serial killers. So, but yes, of course. But yes, but also how odd. So we try to kind of build that into when we select authors to come. So romance, there's some YA, we have suspense and thriller, cozy mysteries. We try to sort of stock it like we expect the readers to want to. They're looking around, they don't just want one thing, they want a lot of different things that they read. And so that's our programming thought.
Cool. Brenda, you had a question about locations, right?
Oh, I did. I was like, my name's not next to that. yeah. So how do you determine what locations you have your convention at?
Well, we use the old RT methodology, which was a city that people want to go to that has an international airport and also space large enough for what we do. We are an unusual event because we don't just have a few classrooms during the day and then one big ballroom at night. We have space needs because we have so many parties during the day. We have morning mixers. We have things going on at lunch. We have lottery events. We have a lot going on. So a lot of what we go after is just a city with the space to host us, which is more unusual than you can possibly imagine to find somebody that can help, that can host our space needs.
So it's not like demographics with readers or how readers can travel easily or anything?
Well, we try to pick cities that have surrounding areas that people are used to driving into the city for events. Mm-hmm. So there's public transportation or people are just used to, there's something fun going on in Nashville, so I'm going to drive in or I'm going to take a train in or I'm going to take a bus in. We were in New Orleans this year, for example. I don't know what year it is. So we try to choose places with large populations of people. Readers are everywhere. We wish we could go everywhere. But unfortunately, we try to pick the most populous areas so that more readers can possibly come to see us.
Yeah. Brenda, do you have any more questions about that?
Oh, are you committed to building a diverse lineup of authors?
Yes. This is something that is in particular important to me. And I am constantly out there looking and meeting and keeping my eyes open for a diverse selection of authors. We have traditionally published authors. We have New York Times bestsellers. We have new authors. We have traditionally published and indie authors. We have self-published authors. We have authors that we try to represent as much as possible the diversity of the reading audience. There are a lot of people who just want to be introduced to not the same old stories and the same authors. And I mean, this is part of a larger picture, but I think a lot of these super readers are finding it harder and harder to come to one place and find recommendations for new authors. Our industry is kind of scattered all over the place now. There's not a lot of places where people can go and be introduced to 160 or 200 authors, maybe half of which you've never heard of before. So that's a big part of, particularly for me, a mission that I have.
I love that, that diversity is important to us in Pitch Wars. And so it's nice to hear that you have that on your mind too. Mm-hmm. Diversity and safety make for a better, safer events. And as a result, they're incredibly important to the welfare of our industry. Does your event have a code of conduct for?
Yes, I started at RT. I think I've been doing this for 5 years. And one of the first things that I did was write a new code of conduct that was actually based on a code of conduct written for women's festivals and women's events. So that was my basis for that. Our policy is don't feel like you're making trouble or something like that. You go straight to the hotel. We want to take it out of people's hands in which they feel uncomfortable about saying something, because I don't want somebody to be mad at me, or I don't want the organizers to think I'm a troublemaker, because I mean, this is the reality. People are upset about something and they're afraid because they're afraid of what it's going to mean in larger conjecture, which of course it wouldn't be, but we're human beings and we have emotions. Mm-hmm. So our policy is you go to the hotel and we find out about it and we assist you the best way we can. But we are committed to taking that fear away from people to feel like they'll be penalized. Mm-hmm. If they're feeling uncomfortable, they should be able to say something without feeling uncomfortable.
That's great. Before Book Lovers Con, you were the convention coordinator for Romantic Times, as we were discussing mm-hmm. before. It seems like Book Lovers Con kind of rose up out of the ashes of RT mm-hmm. After the owners decided to shut it down. What was the process like for you to start a new convention or a conference?
Well, I think it's what your mission is, and what your feelings are about the industry. Where do you feel there's a need? I also handle professional development. It's mostly what I did at RT, but it's also a part of what I do at Book Lovers Con. So for me, not only is it a fun place for readers to go and meet and have a good time in a casual setting to meet readers, but also for authors to come and to have two full days of programming devoted to them, particularly craft.
Oh, great.
Because I honestly feel, and this is a soapbox, but mm-hmm. I won't get on it, that it gets harder and harder to find craft classes at events. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of marketing, there's business and things like that, but craft suddenly, I don't know what happened to it, but it's my mission to bring it back.
Okay. Because that's what I liked about RT is that you had craft and then you also had reader events. And I didn't know if Book Lovers Con was going to go that route. So that's exciting to hear.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I can't do something without having craft classes. Right. I might like to teach and talk about craft a little bit too much.
Well, we like that. You do like that.
But I think it's about the mission. Mm-hmm. If you think that, if you believe as we do that it gets harder and harder for readers to find mm-hmm. spaces where they meet new authors, where they get to know people. I met some of my best friends at RT. Mm-hmm. I attended RT as an author, a baby author, before I worked for them. So I'm aware from all sides of it. What an event should be like. So that was, you know, it's always in our mind what our mission is. And that's for people to come and have a really good time and leave with books and have their TBR list just be ridiculous. Like that is our goal.
Wonderful. Love that.
So, Terry, I was wondering, I don't know if you have any insight on this, but in addition to the conference, RT Magazine also shut down at the same time, right? And it used to be kind of like the place for romance mm-hmm. book reviews. Do you think anyone has tried or succeeded in filling that void?
I think people have tried. But again, I think this goes back to the idea that there's a lot of corners in the romance market and in the wider publishing industry. There's little corners where people are talking and authors are and readers are. But I don't know that there's a lot of central locations now. And that's just because we've gotten bigger. RT Magazine, if it tried to be comprehensive these days, would be like the San Francisco phone book, I think, and still not get all the books that are coming out and reviews. So I don't know if what we need is for that to be recreated, or if we have to think about what is the next step. What is the next step in the evolution of publishing and Romancelandia and YA and things like that, of how readers find authors they want to read. You know, I don't have an answer for that. I have some theories, but I don't have $1 billion, so I can't make them come true. But if I figure out how to do Netflix for books, watch out.
All right. So I'm sure we have a lot of authors watching who are wondering how to get involved with like larger book conventions mm-hmm. When they're not, you know, really well known. Do you have any advice for them on how to make themselves more appealing to cons like Book Lovers Con?
So I have a sort of a backdoor way to do this. I think, first of all, it's important to, if you possibly can, attend an event, even if you can attend for a day, to see what it's like. See who's there, see how the authors are, just get a feeling of what the event is like, talk to other authors, etc. But I feel like if you can come up with some classes that you teach, I know it seems strange, like I'm trying to get well known, so you want me to come up with a good craft class. Yes. What is it about you that you bring differently to romance or writing that is different than anybody else? Is it your day job? It is your past life? Is it an interesting approach you have? Put together a good class, teach it as much as possibly locally, your local RWA, etc. And honestly, submit it to any of these large events that have a component, because you show up, do a good class, and they remember you. I remember you. I remember the people who come as readers and come up to me and talk to me and ask me about the event. That to me shows somebody who really cares about giving the readers a good experience. And honestly, at the end of the day, if you are an event planner worth your sauce, you care that that readers are going to get the best possible experience they have. And honestly, that matters to me more than anything else. There are plenty of people who are well-known names, and I'm not saying that to be shady, but there are plenty of people with well-known names who are not good with readers. They're just not. It's not their, some people are so introverted, they can't sit at a table and play Cards Against Humanity with people and not want to throw themselves out the door. And I respect that. But if there are people out there who will give my readers the best time possible, that's who I want to get to know. That's who I want to meet. So make yourself as actively a part of the community as you can. Get to know event planners and pick the event that you really want to go to. Like, you don't have to go to all of them, but pick one or two that you really, really want to go to and, you know, get to know the organizers. Put yourself in people's line of sight.
Great. I am also an event planner. So that's my day job. I'm an event planner for a library. And I agree with what you said, especially we get so many people who are like, I want to be an author at this event. And I say, well, this one's full, but, you know, I can put you on the list for next time. But if you want to stop by and check out the event and see what it's like, you know, so you know what to expect. And they never do. They never do. And it's a free event. I work at a library. All our events are free, you know? So it's like,
right. It makes an impression. And can I give everybody a secret? Never, ever, ever approach somebody, an event planner, and say, can I be a part of the signing? Because that tells me you're just there to want to sell books. And I get it. I would also like to sell books. But as an event planner, my whole mission is for my readers to walk out and go, that was amazing. I had such a good experience, and not look at my books. That to me is the true ROI in all of this, is readers suddenly going, I have a new favorite person. I have a new favorite author. I'm going to go and talk about them on social media. And so, yeah, don't say I want to be part of the signing, particularly if it's not a signing. Don't say that. Don't say that. So that's my secret tip that you could only get here on Pub Talk Live.
That's great. So also you offer book coaching services. Yes. Can you tell us a little bit about what a book coach is and how can an author benefit from hiring one?
So I call it plot whispering. And it's one of those weird things. You know how people can juggle? My weird skill is for people to tell me their premise that is not working, and to help them figure out how to make it work. I don't know why. It is a weird skill. It is like juggling. It just works that way. So I plot whisper. I sit down with people. They tell me their story. They tell me where they're stuck. And we ask and answer questions until they find their way out of the weeds. I also do some exercises with them to sort of get to know what their style is, what they really want to write. A lot of people get stuck because they try writing something that they actually have no interest in, but somebody somewhere told them it was selling and now they're trying to write it. You have to write what you love, and you have to write what you're interested in, or you're not going to write 100,000 words. I think it can benefit somebody who feels like they're on the verge, who feels like they've written a couple of books, but they're not their best books, and they're ready to level up, because they're going to do a little bit deeper examination of who they are as a writer and what project they're trying to work on. So, I do it at the drop of a hat, and then you can. So if you find me at an event, you might be able to sneak it into me.
I know what I'm going to be feeding you, like wine.
Oh, no, my plot has been discovered. Give me wine and tell me your plot problems and I'll figure them out, because I have to. I literally have to. I can't just let it lie there.
So. That's great.
Now everyone watching knows, though.
Yeah, yeah. I know. You're going to have free drinks for life.
Oh, no. Oh, no. Once again, my evil plan. See, you thought I was so nice. You started all this off with, she's so nice. And then I conclude with my evil plan to get people to buy me free drinks.
So I have one more question for you. And I actually asked this question of like everyone I interview on any format. And it kind of... Well, I'll just go ahead and ask it. A lot of people feel put on the spot, but it's not that bad.
All right.
What is the most important book you've ever read and why?
Okay. So it's actually Lightning by Dean Koontz. And the reason for that is because it was a mix of genres, and it was something that I had not seen before, in terms of humor, romance, time traveling Nazis, action, adventure. And I read it and felt like suddenly the voice in my head as a writer was actually something that people would read. And so that was actually a big turning point for me, because I had tried to write in styles of genres and it didn't work for me because it wasn't the book I was supposed to be writing. So that book really opened up my eyes to the idea that your voice can transcend the expectations of a genre or the rules of a genre, and you could create something that was incredibly unique. So that book really unlocked my permissions for me to be the writer I wanted to be.
Awesome. Thank you. Great answer. Thank you. All right. Well, Terry, thank you so much for coming on the show today.
Sure.
Thank you,
absolutely,
Carrie.
My pleasure.
Great talking to you.
Great talking to you. I will see you all in February.
Yeah, and you can find Terry's information, website, and Twitter on and down below in the description on YouTube. So, yeah, thank you, Terry.
Thank you.
Thank you, Terry.
Good night.
Good night.
All right, Brenda, you know what? I realized just now my glasses match the banner.
That is cool. Yeah, they do. Mine are, do not. I need to.
I was just like, whoa.
It has to be a requirement now for all your hosts, co-hosts.
No.
No. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. So, we have a segment that I really wanted to do on this show because I love audiobooks so much. And so I wanted to do kind of an audiobook of the week thing where I just kind of like promote an audiobook that I listened to and I liked. So, and yeah, the first one is So You Want to Start a Podcast by Kristen Meinzer. I think that's how you say her last name. I should know because I listened to the audiobook and they said it on there. But so the publisher says it's an inspiring, comprehensive, step-by-step guide to creating a hit show. So You Want to Start a Podcast covers everything from hosting and guest booking to editing and marketing while offering plenty of encouragement and insider stories along the way. And Kristen is the host of By the Book podcast and has worked on many award-winning shows.
Does this mean you're going to, is this a hint? Are you working towards becoming a podcast?
No. So that's what's funny is, so I get audiobooks from publishers because I write for Book Riot and they offered me this one and I was like, that sounds interesting. I'll listen to it. And it happened to come at the time when I was like trying to think about this show and what I wanted this show to be. And it helped me think through a lot of the different decisions I need to make about this show. And so even though I didn't want to start a podcast, like the kind of the structure and the format is kind of similar. And a lot of like the business and organization kind of part of it is similar to a podcast. And so it actually helped me quite a bit, you know, putting this show together. So, yeah. So if you are thinking about starting a podcast or any kind of like media show like that, I recommend this book. My friend Bess commented, let me pull up the comments here. Hey, I know this book because I recommended it to her and she started listening to it and she's thinking about starting a podcast. So, yeah, so I just wanted to kind of like promo an audiobook every episode and that was my choice this week. I am, however, I'm judging for the Audis. Do you know what the Audis are, Brenda?
It must have to do with audiobooks.
Yeah, that's
awards.
It's the Audiobook Publishers Association. I can't remember the exact name of the organization right now, but it's, yeah, their awards. And so I'm a judge for them and I'm not allowed to say what category or what books I'm reading or anything. And so like, I think the next couple audiobooks of the week are going to have to be like older audiobooks that I listened to before.
Okay.
Do you listen to audiobooks?
Yeah, I do. I'm finishing up listening to Sadie, which everyone was recommending and I'm like so into. So that's been a really fun listening that I'm listening to right now. So listened to it?
Yeah, I listened to it actually like a month ago.
Yeah. Don't tell me the ending. No, I really like the voice. I like how it is a podcast kind of thing going on there.
It was specifically designed to be like a kind of multimedia experience. So it was really designed, I think, to be an audiobook, you know. Ebony said, I'm an audiobook junkie, 2019 goal, 100 audiobooks. I'm at 76. You're almost there. You're right on track.
Wow, that's great.
And Heather said, I love audiobooks too. I'm so glad. I love audiobooks. I consider myself an audiobook evangelist. So
it was so fun to hear like my books when they came out in audio because they're like, it's so interesting to hear the voices, you know, like, and I love that. Like I'll read the book and then do the audio just to hear how someone does the voices for the books that I love.
Yeah.
I don't know why.
Heather said, I just finished Mystwick School for Music Craft, which is fun because they have a youth orchestra performing most of the music.
Oh, wow. Cool. Yeah. We're gonna check that out.
Yeah, definitely. I actually did a post for Book Riot about books that have music accompaniments, not necessarily audiobooks, but so it is time to check in with our reader poll.
Dun, dun, dun. Yeah. Do I need to hear a drum or something? I don't know if you can hear my drumming or not.
So let's see. Have you ever attended a large book festival or convention? We have most of the people, 53% it looks like, said no, but I'd love to. 40% said yes, I'd love them. 5% no, and I don't plan to. And then 2% said yes, not a fan. So hopefully the ones that said no, I don't plan to, might get a kind of different viewpoint on our based on our conversations today. Mm-hmm. But I was actually surprised that there were
those were the spammers.
No. I was actually surprised there weren't more people who didn't want to go to conventions, because they always say that, you know, book people are introverts, and I understand. I don't know from example, but I understand that book, especially large conventions, can be difficult and stressful. So,
and that's I know that, like, when I'm at conventions and stuff, I make it a point to be available and to reach out to people and have groups and stuff because of that. You know, like, if you are at a convention and you see someone who is off to themselves, reach out to them and help them, and that way they have a better experience and they meet new friends and stuff.
Yeah, for sure. I love them. Like, just for the record, I love them. If you have a convention, please invite me to it. Like, I want to go to as many conventions
invite
as possible.
Invite us both together.
Yeah, we can room together. It's cheaper. Yeah. We are teaching at the Florida Writers Association conference next week.
I keep on forgetting that's coming.
Well, you better not forget, because you have to fly here.
I know. I'm like, oh yeah, that's coming Wednesday.
Yeah. And we're rooming together for that. So that's, you know,
I'm
benefit.
Looking forward to it. Hopefully we see people who are in Orlando at the Florida Writers Convention. I hope.
Yeah. So I wanted to wrap up the episodes with a reading or a book quote of the week, because it's just another thing that I really enjoy, and that's quotes, like especially short quotes. So the one that I came up with for today is, books are the plane and the train and the road. They are the destination and the journey. They are home. That's from Anna Quinlan. I like that one because
it reminds me of that movie, Plane, Trains. You're getting somewhere.
That's funny.
Yeah, I like that one though. I like the ending, the journey, and the they are home.
Yeah,
definitely home.
For sure, especially for us. Mm-hmm. Well, Brenda, we survived. We survived.
I can't believe
first
it.
Episode of Pub Talk Live,
and I didn't need another gin and tonic. <Just kidding.
laughs> Oh, Brenda. Yeah. So,
well, thanks
y'all.
Sorry. I thought I was going to. I was like, thank you for having me as your first co-host.
Yeah. Thank you so much for being my first co-host. I was like, I can't believe people are agreeing to this without knowing what to expect.
Well, I figured I'm going to be rooming with you for like how many days?
So thank you so much for watching. Thanks to everyone who's commenting. We had just a really great conversation going on in the comments. I tried to share some of them, but there's even more. And so I just really appreciate y'all showing up and participating in the conversation and hanging out with us on a Saturday night. Just a couple of quick like administrative announcements before I sign us off here. Down below in the description, you're going to find more information about Brenda and Terry and Book Lovers Con and Coastal Magic Convention. And there's also information about Pub Talk Live, so you can sign up to receive email reminders about the episodes. You can also check out our Patreon there. We have several different tiers, and at one tier, you can actually sign up to ask questions of our guests. So you can propose questions, and if I use your question, I'll credit you on air. And so check that out. And then, the Pub Talk Live social media is Twitter and Instagram. It's just @PubTalkLive. easy, no spaces, no weird characters, anything like that. Heather said, doing bookish and writerly things is my ideal Saturday night.
I think that's great. We're like connected, her and I, or everybody in the book world.
Yeah, I actually did some like reader polls to figure out, you know, what would be the best time for people. And this was actually not my first choice, but this was the one that was selected the most by people. So
nice. Okay. Yeah. That's good. All right. No.
So thank y'all for joining us. I'm going to put the outro up here in a second, and please find us on social media.
Thanks everyone.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you so much for listening to this pre-recorded episode of Pub Talk Live. To find out more about the show and to find out how you can watch live, go to pubtalk.live. Thank you so much to my Patreon podcast sponsors, Brenda Drake and Jay Lynn.